This is the Car Dealer Podcast driven by CarGurus. You want the best return for your advertising budgets, and CarGurus Piston Heads are focused on the same goal. With them, you have access to millions of monthly shoppers across both sites. Connect with in-market high-quality buyers today and turbocharge your digital forecourt. For more information, visit dealerpackages.cargurus.co.uk and schedule a demo with their team. That's dealerpackages.cargurus.co.uk and tell them we sent you.
Welcome back to the Car Dealer Podcast. If you haven't listened before, we pick our favourite stories of the week and ask an industry guest to choose which were the best. I'm John Ray, and joining me, as ever, is founder of Car Dealer Magazine, James Baggett. James, how are you?
I'm very good, thanks, John. Pleased to be here once again.
Oh, well, that's good, because you are contractually obliged. We had a busy week.
I have had a busy week. I'm sure we'll come on to that. It was the used car awards, but I would like to just a slight segue. Last night, this is a slightly different story. I drove the new ID Buzz. I don't know if you knew that I was being dropped off my house, but I just wanted to mention that car is seriously cool.
Are you being paid to say this?
No, I'm not. Please can have a long term of Volkswagen. Please, please, please.
Just have to say, chocolate oranges are available at Rawlinson's. Thank you.
I know that's quite a strange way to start the podcast, but I'm just, it's due to be picked up at lunchtime, which is what made me think about it. But I just think that car's absolutely brilliant and I really enjoy driving it. So there's a little bit of news for you on my week.
Oh, well, thank you. Well, I will just say I did the international launch.
Of course you did.
And I was similarly impressed, apart from not from the infotainment, which is the same terrible VW one that they've got in everything. I see you nodding. And then the other thing is that annoys me about it is it's a big people carrier. And okay, I say this as a person that's never going to have any children, but it has not got three ISOFIX points in the back and it hasn't got clever seats like a Caravelle used to have.
John, well done.
Yeah. Jim, if you're listening, any jobs available, I am happy to oblige. Okay, so moving on.
You're not allowed to go anywhere, John. move on.
Moving on. Our guest this week is the founder of serial award-winning dealership Car Key. It is, of course, Jamie Capel. Jamie, thank you for joining us. How are you?
Feeling a little bit ropey after a fabulous evening on Monday night. I'm very cold. I've got a bit of a sore throat, but my spirits are high. You know, it's a great week for the business, man. It's been a good year. And honestly, Monday night was just the icing on the cake. You know, it's always a bit roller coastery, this job, you know, has my own, you know, mental well-being is throughout the year. It's just a job. But, you know, it's been a good year overall. And as I say, Monday night, just finished it off in style. Was so pleased and proud and happy.
No, I was just going to say, just for those people listening who didn't see the news, Car Key won Used Car Sales Team of the Year. Massive congratulations on that one. I know it was, I could see it meant a lot to you. I was helping backstage at the time, but as I knew that one was coming up, I wanted to see the reaction of your table, and I could just see you all absolutely erupt when that was read out, and you all rushing towards. There's that amazing picture of you, isn't there? Rushing towards the stage. Photographer took some great shots this year, and that one of you like rushing towards the stage, you could just see how happy you were. You've done very well over the years in the used car awards, and rightly so. You've got a brilliant business. You mystery shopped absolutely fantastically this year. What do the used car awards mean to you and the team?
Just you know, again, bit emotional, man. You know, you're just repeating back, that's it. When you're there, I'm so stressed and tense and wound up at the moment, and it's a bit of a blur. And you know, you there saying, watching the table, it erupt as getting up, and it's taking me back, and it's like I'm actually experiencing it again, but in a bit of slow motion and remembering it now, and feeling the way it makes me feel, which is amazing. You know, I've won personally awards over the last few years, which I'm very proud of, but I you know. My team, I don't want to take the glory, man. Do you know what I mean? For everything that they do. And that's why I said to you on the night, I said, this one meant the most because it's about them. You know, the people here, the people who give it their all every day, every time they're here. And I wanted them to win. Do you know what I mean? More than me. I obviously wanted to win, don't get me wrong, you know, but for them in particular. And, you know, what do those awards mean? I mean, you take stock of the industry you're in. There's thousands and tens of thousands of dealers. There's huge PLCs. There's people who are a lot more intelligent than me, I'm sure can do the job a lot better than I can, or know the industry, or more talented, or got more natural ability than us and me and my team. But so for us to be recognised as being the best, you know, in not a small industry, we're in a big industry. Honestly, you don't realise what it means to us. It means so much, and you know, Car Dealer Magazine is a very respected publication in the industry, and it is. I'm not blowing smoke here now, lads, but it is.
We'll take this one.
You can come back. Yeah.
And Brewer being there as well, you know, you kind of forget when you talk to him, you have a crap with him. But the guy's a global megastar, you know, who loves to argue with people on social media. And I always want to say to Mike, man, just ignore him.
I know.
They're chumps, man. They're nothings, you know. And he gets...
I do feel for him a little bit on social. He definitely gets a little bit of grief. Jamie, as part of our stories, I'm sure the used car awards will come up. Well, it's definitely on my list, so I'm not going to dwell on it. But what I'd just like to do is just not going to dwell on it now. What I'd like to do, just when we're having a quick chat, is just tell people a little bit about your business. Those people who are listening, about what you do and how it's set up.
Okay, so we're a used car dealer based in the Midlands. We started in 17 with 10 cars. Business born out of me, I suppose, being involved in another business that went belly up. Had no choice but to really kind of go for it again because I had a mountain of financial issues brought on by my old business. So it was a bit of a case of, look, you're going to have to do this again. But I learned so much from my old business and I did it differently this time. And we just built up, you know. We didn't take any stocking facilities. We walked before we could run. You know, we did everything super sensible this time. When I say we, it was me, then my parents, and then Craig, and then as everyone else has joined. But all we've done is we're a plot of land with a digital, you know, with a website, with an Auto Trader account. You know, and we buy cars, we market them and we sell them. And from those small beginnings in 17, we find ourselves now at the end of 2022, kind of 250 cars in stock, 20 team members, a profitable business, great relationships throughout the industry. And we plow on. What we do is nothing different to what anybody else does, I believe. We just try hard. We try hard and we try and make our customers feel special, you know.
What bit do you like about it the most, Jamie? Is it, I get you there, you're a bit of a deal maker, aren't you? I mean, every time I met you, you know, you're always, you're 100 miles an hour you're always either buying something or selling something. What part of it do you like the most? Is it the buying or is it the selling?
I love buying. I absolutely love buying because I don't spend lots of money in real life. I don't. So when I go to a sale, I love it. I just love it. If you ever see me in action on a Tuesday.
I have seen.
But it's remember that. I mean, that was 2 years ago, James. You know, amplify that up. If I'm at a sale, there's 200 cars. Sometimes I'm trying to buy 20 or 30 cars. And I'll do my research. I mean, this is the thing. A lot of people will just go and they're looking at cap and thinking, oh, is that behind cap? Cap's not irrelevant. It is there and it obviously has its purpose and everything like that. But for us, what we can sell something for is what matters. So I'll do my research before a sale. I'll go, I'll highlight maybe 60 cars out of 200 that I would have an interest in buying, see what I can sell them for. So I know what I've got to pay for it to make sense buying it. And then I try and buy 20, 30 cars. If everything's expensive, then I won't buy as many, you know, and if everything's super cheap, then I sometimes buy more, but I absolutely love buying. I'm telling you, it's my favorite part of the job. And the beauty is now, because I've got such a good team, and we have a WhatsApp group, as I'm sure you will, a business WhatsApp group, while I'm at auction, ping, and it's picture of the car sold. So when I'm out of the business and I see that we're dealing, it's like I'm dealing still, even though I'm not there. And then I'm buying and the lads are dealing. And it's great. It's great also part of the business. Great to see the team develop, to see them come on and what they can do now and how they can turn a customer around, for example, without me necessarily needing to get involved or how they can deal with situations. Because I'm spending less time in the business now. I'm still 100% business. When I'm not there, I'm constantly thinking of it. But again, sometimes it empowers them to not just come and see me. How can I deal with this situation? And I'll often say to them now when they come in, look, what would you do if it was a Tuesday and I was at auction and Craig wasn't here? What would you do? Well, this is what I'd do, Jamie. Why would you do that? Well, I'd do it because of this. Brilliant. You've answered your own question. Go and do it. Well done. You know, do you know what I mean? And to it's not about being lazy, just sometimes to see them develop and grow is brilliant. And I feel now I've been very hands-on, incredibly hands-on from day one, and I've had to have been. And only now am I starting to not detach myself from the business, but actually able to sit back and know that if I'm not here, cars will still be sold, problems will still get dealt with, cars will get prepared, team will photograph cars. The machine is starting to run itself, which is...
Jamie, you've freely admitted, you know, the last business you were involved with didn't go to plan, and you've had to go back to square one and start again. Yes. And those sorts of experiences really do teach you lessons in life and business.
Yes.
For those people looking to start up on themselves, what would your one piece of advice be that you've learned from those experiences? What would you tell people?
All too often in this trade, ego can really make people make bad decisions or you know, and don't worry about what everyone else is doing. Don't think because Dave's got a Ferrari or Chris is running a 911 that's what you've got to do. Just make profit, man. And those things will come. Like even now, I keep saying to myself, I'm going to buy myself a demo one day. I've kind of been saying it from day one. This is 17. The point will come where I can go and buy something really spunky. And I'm in a 17 plate, 113,000 mile E-Class estate in red. I love it, you know, and I keep driving past 992s. They look so technical in fact, don't they, with the little fins and like that's like a futuristic looking Porsche now. And my wife Lucy, she clocked me looking the other day. She was like, you were looking at that Porsche, weren't you? I was like, yeah. She's like, you're just a loser. And I'm like, yeah. And I'm like, you know what? I'll buy one when I'm 50. I'll get to 50. I won't buy one. I won't, you know, but I would say that focus on your business. Profit's the most important thing, you know, and just what I've learned with this business, because again, the old business, I don't like to talk about it too much, but you know, they ran into some quality issues of customers and stuff. And I don't think there was ever an intention not to help customers out, but it was just following through and actually doing these things. So I would say now is if you have a customer and you've got a problem, deal with it. Don't tuck it away. Just deal with it head on. And I don't like to use the word throw money at problems, but that is our philosophy now, is if we've got a customer with an issue, throw money at the problem until the problem goes away. Because while you've got that problem, it's stopping you moving on. It's stopping you making money. When you're arguing with someone over a £200 set of brakes, you imagine the next call you take and it's a customer who's 50-50 and they need you at your best to tip them. If you've been arguing for an hour or half an hour, you ain't going to deal that next customer because you're going to approach it the wrong way. So just, you know, don't take problems home. Just deal with them. And just take it steady. Don't rush to go and get yourself a massive stocking facility because you feel you need to have hundreds of thousands of pounds worth of cars on your forecourt. You don't. Some of the most profitable deals we do are on the cheaper cars that we buy. The stuff I buy for £6,000-£8,000 versus the stuff that's £20,000-£30,000. And you'll notice, if you look at our stock now, the heavier stuff we're coming away from. We've got a £48,000 RS5 in the showroom. Once that car's sold, it ain't getting replaced. It'll get replaced with 5 Miley E-classes or C-classes, you know. And that's it. And just...
What would you? I mean, I'm sure you still get out there on the showroom floor and actually do some deals. How would you describe your sales technique? I imagine it's like pretty full on, but I mean, I'd like to hear from the man himself.
Okay, so my dad was a performer when he was growing up. When I was a kid, he was a musician and a comedian. And he'd disappear on a Friday night, Saturday night to a working men's club in Stoke or in, I don't know, the middle of nowhere. And he'd go and perform. So I think when I got with a customer, I would see that I've got an hour with him and I've got to put a performance on for an hour where I make them laugh, I win them, I win their trust, they like me, they want to be with me and they want to buy off me. So I was never the five-minute dealer. Again, I worked in dealerships where I'd be wowed by lads who get deposits within minutes. And I'd be like, how have you done that? But it didn't really work for me. And to a fault sometimes, because I'd spend an hour and then they'd like, we're going to have a think about it, Jake. Oh, no. I've given all my best material and I've not dealt. And then Dave over there took a deposit in 5 minutes. But that was my technique. I'd just love them up. I'd have fun with them and I'd make them enjoy themselves and relax. Because I'm the same, you know, price, sometimes even the product becomes secondary. If I'm invested in the person I'm dealing with, then I'll just deal with them. And I'll sometimes buy things that maybe I don't necessarily want or weren't my first choice because actually the person who I was dealing with, I liked them, I wanted to deal with them. So I suppose I try and be the salesperson that I would want to be sold to by if I'd gone into a business as well, yeah. You know, and... I don't know everything. I'm not the best salesman in the world. There's no little techniques or tricks or dodgy handshakes or body language things. I don't. I just try and win them over. But then I try and do that across the board in life with my staff, with people I deal with. I'm constantly dealing, if that makes sense.
It comes down to passion, doesn't it? I think passion, yeah. Passion in what you do and belief in what you do. So people buy into that. Right, John, unless you've got some burning questions for Jamie, perhaps we should get cracking on.
Well, I was going to say, you know, I think obviously the best car that you've ever stopped was a silver 2007 Impreza that I perhaps we'll move on. So if you haven't listened before, James and I have chosen our favourite stories from the car dealer website this week. We don't know what each other has chosen, and we're going to have a chat about each one as we go through. At the end, Jamie gets to decide whose stories were the best and who is the winner. If you want to play along, you can tweet at Car Dealer Mag and let us know if you think we've missed anything. The last time we had this, James actually won, which is a nice surprise for him. So, yeah.
Thank you, John.
Go first.
I will go first. Thank you. That is my right. Right. I am going to pick a story that we published on Monday morning, which was news from CAP HPI, an interview that we did on Car Dealer Live video with Darren Martin from the valuations company, revealing that values of used cars dropped 1.2% in November. This is off the back of a slight dip in October too. But the big story here and the one that I saw buried a little bit further down the piece was the fact that electric cars were particularly badly hit. Compared to that 1.2% fall, electric cars fell 3.7% in November, with Teslas in particularly badly hit. There's three of them in the top 10.
I mean, there are only three Teslas, and there's four.
This is true, yes. Yes, it's true. There's four, isn't there? The Model S and the Model 3 were the biggest fallers. The Model S lost nearly £3,000. The Model 3 lost £2,200, both dropping around 6%. That's in a month. Yeah, that's on October. Darren also told us that actually the Model 3 had fallen 16% in the last quarter alone, which equated to £7,000. And he puts this down to the fact that that basically consumers are being put off by high energy prices, unsurprisingly, and also explained that actually these electric cars are often seen as an aspirational purchase. And at the moment, with the industry, the economy, I mean, in a slight downturn, people are putting off buying these sorts of vehicles. So I wanted to get Jamie's opinion on this, really. I mean, what are you seeing with electric cars in particular, but also with the wider used car market in general?
So we've struggled to buy electric cars of late, and we wanted to. Pre-pandemic, we were pushing. We bought a Tesla. We started buying loads of Nissan Leafs. We were buying them out of those Renault finance sales and stuff. And we were buying loads of them. And we're getting them at sensible money. And then from pandemic onwards, it's been really difficult for us to buy electric cars because the demand seemed to rocket in them, didn't it? And I'd heard whisperings. A friend of mine in the trade said to me a month or so ago that he'd got a friend who's got a site with a colossal amount of Teslas. And he said they are falling off a cliff. And like he's that wedged into them, at the money he's at, it's almost going to, not going to send him under. But, you know, by the time he's sold his stock that he's got, due to how much they've dropped recently, he's going to take an absolute bath and a half. So I thought like electric cars would be, they wouldn't drop, you know, they'd maintain the values really hard. And it's almost like I certainly didn't see this coming, but you're right. Electricity prices have shot up. So, and then they're talking about you're not going to get free road tax anymore. And suddenly, an electric car doesn't look as half an attractive proposition as maybe it did. I don't know.
In stock at the moment, Jamie?
We don't have a single electric car in stock, and that's not.
Will you be buying any?
I still would. I mean, all I care about is what the. And again, sorry to plug Auto Trader, you know, but again, I care what Auto Trader's retail price tells me it is, and then can I buy it to give me enough between the two. And that's it. It's a simple equation. So if I went to a sale and there was 20 cars for sale and 10 were electric and I was only going to buy 10 cars and 10 weren't, and I could buy the 10 non-electric cars with bigger margin than the 10 electric cars, I'd just simply buy the cars that I could put the biggest margin across. That's what I would do. So, but there aren't any...
You've got to turn them around pretty quickly, haven't you? Because if it's dropping 6% and you've bought it at X and you can sell it at X... You're rapidly losing margin, aren't you?
I know. I think there was that much hype and demand, as I say, that maybe the prices became unrealistic. We took in a Model 3 about 4 months ago, and I thought Craig had given far too much money for it. And I was wincing. I was like, what? I mean, that's new car money. It was almost the price of a new one, and it was a year old, done 4,000 or 5,000 miles. And I panicked. Yet my Auto Trader rep was saying 100 retail marker, 100 rating, Jamie, you've priced it too cheap. I was panicking because I thought it's a lot of money and I want to sell it quickly. And he's like, you're underselling it. Look how desirable it is. I would assume now in the last couple of months since we sold that the desirability rating has probably started to tank somewhat based on the fact that they're plummeting in value. But we had that Tesla, we sold it quickly. Whether we got lucky or not, I don't know. But it certainly wouldn't stop me buying some more. I just think it's not easy. It's not as easy as buying a petrol car, because you buy a Tesla, you have a key card, don't you? So you have to speak to Tesla. You have to get it registered to a customer. It's a little bit faffy, you know, to transfer everything over. And like we were using the Tesla and we were going and charging it. And the previous owner was ringing us. He's like, "You've done a tenner on charging the car." We had to send him money back because the car was billing him for us using it. But anyway, I'm kind of waffling a bit here. I think prices have settled a little bit. Certainly the later stuff. I'm taking late plates, lower mileage stuff in. It's not ideally what we sell, so I'm trading a lot of it. You know, we took in a 20 plate Jag XF petrol estate, done 20. That's not really a car key car. We're a 13 plate XF sport brake, done 109. You know what I mean? That's us. So some of that late stuff, I've been trading it, but then the trades come at the end of a month, and suddenly the supply, the people we're selling it to are like, where's the car? And then you check in guide. And some of this stuff took 500-700 quid. Do you know what I mean? As we've gone into December. So, and some stuff did take a dip going from October into November as well. So I think the stuff we're selling, which is older, slightly higher mileage stuff, is dipping a bit. But as I say, the late and low stuff, the stuff that's really blown up over the last 2 years and astronomically gone up in value, is starting to come down a little bit now. So,
interesting. That's my first one. John, over to you.
Okay, well, you stole that one from me. So
you're welcome.
Oh, I'm getting a taste of my own medicine. So I am going to talk about agency sales and Ford, which I'm sure Joe has on his list. So this is an interview that my colleague Jack Williams had with Tim Slatter, the chair of Ford in Britain. And they have effectively come out and said that agency sales are on the way for Ford. There's no time frame given, but they are arriving soon. And it's the same kind of sentiment that we've seen from other car manufacturers where the move to electrification is being used as the reason for this particular thing. So as far as Tim Slatter is concerned, he believes that the future of software-defined vehicles, as he calls them, for them to be successful, Ford needs to have a more direct relationship with its customers. And I quote, "And when we move to fully electric vehicles, it's not just the powertrain in the vehicle which changes. I think a lot of people just think that it's an electric powertrain rather than an ICE internal combustion engine powertrain. So why is this a big transition? But the reality is almost the whole industry changes." So, yes, big words of future change coming from Ford by the looks of it.
I just have ringing in my ears when you talk about agency sales, the podcast we did last week with David Kendrick, and I covered it as a story, and I haven't picked it for my list this week because it is about last week's podcast. But David Kendrick basically said to us then, didn't he, that the agency sales model was causing uncertainty for car dealer valuations.
Yes.
Because nobody knows what it looks like. Everybody's worried about what's coming down the road and the profitability, what's that's going to mean for profitability for dealers. And actually, those dealers that represent a manufacturer that isn't going down the agency sales model is worth more than one that is. So the last thing that he said that really stuck with me is he's only spoken to one CEO who thinks it's a good idea out of hundreds. So I mean, the agency sales model is being forced as a bit of a land grab of margin, David Kendrick's words, and I can see that many people are going to be doing it going forward. I mean, it's no surprise Ford are doing this. Many other manufacturers have mentioned it, but I think we all want to know what's it actually going to mean to the industry. What's it going to mean for dealers in the future?
Yeah, and I mean, the way that he's speaking about it here goes back to what Jamie was just saying about Tesla, and you know, the car is more intrinsically linked to the manufacturer than perhaps it was. That's what it sounds like to me. Like, perhaps there's a lot more software related stuff in this car that means the manufacturer is going to have control over it. I don't really know. Jamie, thoughts?
It just seems like it's a way of the manufacturers making more money. Sorry, there's a few notifications just come through. I don't understand why there is this massive change, and if something's working, why change it? But there's got to be something driving that change or a reason for why they want to do it. I mean, is it standardize it, trying to more standardize the experience that every customer gets, or is it because they want, like you say, to take a bigger slice of the pie? I mean, electrification as well. What's this going to mean for workshops? Because we've talked about this here. Like Craig regularly jokes with Joe, you know, when we're fully electric, Joe, you're gone. We don't need you guys anymore. So where's the, you know what I mean? Like, I don't know. I just wonder how that traditional bricks and mortar car dealership's going to look in 10, 15 years. And correct me if I'm wrong here, but service departments generate the massive amounts of the revenue. They always used to call it, what did they call it? I forget what the word was called, absorption rate. So like if your absorption rate was 100%, we talked about this when I was at Merck years ago, that meant that the workshop paid for everything. And then anything else that the sales department made, that was actually pure profit. But if you got your absorption rate 100%, it meant the workshop funded everything. And that was where the big money came. So I don't know if there's an eye on that into the future, what's going to happen with the workshops and stuff, but I don't know, you know, I'm not into new cars, you know. They dribble down to us. We get to see new cars after about 8 years. It's when they turn up here with 100 of them.
We'll be right back. You want the best return from your advertising budget, and CarGurus Piston Heads are focused on the same goal. With them, you have access to millions of monthly shoppers across both sites. Connect with in-market, high-quality buyers today and turbocharge your digital forecourt. For more information, visit dealerpackages.cargurus.co.uk and schedule a demo with their team. That's dealerpackages.cargurus.co.uk and tell them we sent you. Now, let's get back to the quiz.
Right. I'm going to do my one, John, if that's right with you.
Okay.
My next story is an exclusive news piece that we published this week about Arnold Clark pulling out of their deal to buy the car dealer group Cars 2. You might have remembered a couple of weeks back, I think it started in November, we reported on news that Arnold Clark was in discussions with Cars 2. To purchase that group. They are a Yorkshire-based business representing Hyundai, Seat, Nissan, Renault, Dacia, Fiat, Abarth, and MG. When I called a few of the dealerships back then, a couple of salesmen told me, different dealerships in the group, said, oh, yeah, the deal's definitely happening. But Arnold Clark and the Cars 2 directors remained very quiet. But now it turns out I had a bit of a tip off this week from a contact that deal was off, spoke to Arnold Clark and Eddie Hawthorne, their CEO, issued a statement saying that over the last month and a half, they had been in negotiation with a view to purchase Cars 2, but unfortunately, they were unable to agree terms to complete the deal, which is very unusual. Normally, when this sort of information gets out, especially if staff have been told in dealerships that a deal is being done, it's normally at very, very late stages, if not ink slowly drying on the paper already. So the fact that this hasn't gone through will be a shock to a number of people. I was very, very surprised by it. But it meant a couple of things to me. It firstly shows that Cars 2 is up for sale and someone's going to be buying that very shortly. I'm sure that if the Arnold Clark deal doesn't go through, there'll be somebody else acquisitive out there that will snap them up. But it also shows that Arnold Clark are looking to make some big moves. They haven't bought something for a long time. I personally thought it was quite a strange purchase for them, but it was a purchase nonetheless. And I think with the amount of money that they've got stashed away after a few bumper years, they've got a lot of cash ready to go out there and buy something.
Cars, I saw the article. I buy a few cars to part exchanges out of auction, and I remember seeing the article, and then I remember seeing it because I get my WhatsApps every day straight on there on the old car dealer feed, and I saw that they'd pulled out. I was surprised. I thought, again, you know, Arnold Clark have done amazing, haven't they, over the last few years. Again, you've obviously following Car Dealer magazine, you report on it, and actually they've done staggeringly well, haven't they? Let's be right. They're the boys, aren't they? They're the one and the girls, of course, but they're owning it. So yeah, I saw it and saw they pulled out. I wondered, what's happened? Has somebody called someone somewhere, or have they unearthed something, or who knows? I mean, I don't want to wildly speculate, but you know, again, ego. Someone, you know, said something. I don't know. You just don't know, do you?
No, you don't. I'd love to be a fly on the wall, find out what has happened there. But
yeah, we might throw a bid in, man. We'll throw a bid in.
I can start that rumour for you now if you want.
Got about 73p in my pocket, and you know, and a slightly damaged Kazoo water bottle. I could exchange.
It's probably highly sought after now, though. It's probably a collector's item. Right, that's my John. Over to you.
Okay, I am going to bring it back to used car awards, but I'm not going to focus on used car awards because I know you want to do that, James. So this is... this is a story. Well, it's comments from Suzuki boss Dale Wyatt, who is praising our used car awards lifetime achievement winner, which is of course Robin Luscombe, who many people will know. And the crux of this is basically Dale is saying that it's, apart from Robin being a shining example of, you know, entrepreneurial spirit and so on, he's also kind of pleased that small car dealerships and dealer groups are getting some recognition, and that the small dealership, as it were, has got a lot of life in it yet. So I thought there's some really nice comments from Dale in here. Dale is actually, I think he's off work at the minute, isn't he? He's on leave. But a few quotes: these dealerships have had to adapt quickly to survive. They have shown themselves to be resilient, and the trials and tribulations of the last 2 to 3 years have proved that they are well positioned to survive and thrive in any market conditions. They're an important part of the community and are responsible for the employment of local people and actively fund local charities. They're valued by, I could go on and on, valued by customers who they serve and have built trusted brands with tremendous loyalty. Of course, Suzuki is very focused on small kind of local dealers, isn't it?
Yeah.
But I thought this was really nice because, you know, there's, you see a lot of smaller dealer groups, smaller dealer groups and smaller dealers disappearing, and manufacturers talking about pulling franchises from little areas to focus on big cities, and the idea that, you know, customers are happy to travel 30 miles to go and pick up a new car. I don't think they necessarily are, and I think that will become apparent. But I don't know what your thoughts on this are, James.
I love this. I did love that story. But when I spotted the comments from Dale, I had to write that one because it was I think the Robin Luscombe Lifetime Achievement Award on Monday was very special indeed. Mm. I've just got to tell a little story about that one because when Robin was nominated for that award and we went through the judging process and we did the mystery shopping and we decided that he was the right person to get that award, I had to subtly make sure he was going to be there. So I contacted him via LinkedIn and asked him if he was coming along, and he didn't give me quite the answer I wanted. Then he told me a week or so later that he'd got an invite from Black Horse. So he was going to be there on his own, but he was going to be there, which was the important thing. Black Horse is obviously our headline sponsors for the event. But it was as we got a little bit closer to the event and knowing how special the Lifetime Achievement Award is, I thought it was such a shame that he was going to be there on his own. So I decided to pick up the phone and speak to Sam Luscombe, his son. So I rang the dealership, managed to get through to Sam. And it was really awkward because I will never, ever tell anybody that they've won an award. But I had to kind of explain to him that his dad was nominated for Dealer's Dealer, but also up for another award on the evening, which was a very special one, and had to try and convince Sam that it would be a good idea for him and his family to come along to the awards night. Eventually, I think I managed to do it, and he booked his places at the event. But I didn't know until the evening, until I spoke to Sam and Robin later in the bar, Robin didn't know that they were coming down. They were going from the same train station, and Robin's wife had to hide in the train station to make sure she didn't see her husband. And when they got there on the night, they were sat a couple of tables away. And Robin looked across the room and said, I recognize that woman over there. It was obviously his wife. And he was up for Dealer's Dealer, which was the first award, and he didn't win it. He was highly, highly commended in that category. And when that happened, he stormed over to the table where his son was and went, "Oh, well, I can't believe you've brought everybody up here, and I've come highly commended. I haven't even won it. How dare you, laddie?" And Sam's there thinking, "Oh, I really hope James will tell me the truth that he might be up for another award a little later on." And anyway, as the night went on, the last award of the evening, Lifetime Achievement Award, we're reading out the citation for, well, Mike's reading out the citation for it. And I've got it on video because I filmed it on my phone. I was filming him from across the room, and I could just see he was just sat there. He was on his phone. He wasn't really listening, drinking a glass of wine. And then when they read out his name, the shock on his face was just absolutely unbelievable. And there was the standing ovation, and the rest was it was a very special moment. But I love those two awards, Lifetime Achievement and the Outstanding Achievement, are my absolute favorites because they always tell a very, very special story, and the people that get them, you can just see it's a special moment. What did you think
I will say,
John,
excellent speech. I thought you did.
He's very well regarded in the trade. I mean, I don't know if I've ever met him properly, but you know of him, and I've seen his adverts, and I'm sure he puts on there his own phone number. You know, customers can call Robin, call me, the boss of the business, and just seems like a really just a humble, normal grafter who's set his business up, you know, and built up, and feels like a proper family business, doesn't it? You know, Luscombe's, you that's how I feel about it. And I say, I don't know him. I'm not local to him, but I know of him. And I thought he was a very worthy winner. As I say, anyone I speak to in the trade, he's known, people know about him, and he's well-respected and well-regarded. So,
yeah,
but ace how his wife was hiding at the trade. Just brilliant. And, like, clocked the two tables. I think I know her. She's all right. Imagine if he went over, like, can I buy you a drink? Hey, it's your wife. Ah, yeah, I knew.
Sorry to steal your story, John, but I did have used car.
No, that's fine.
And that was one of the stories I wanted to tell.
That was a very good anecdote. Much better. Oh,
thank you.
Yes.
Shall I go with my next one?
Yes.
I've got two more, and I am going to go with the news that Yeomans have bought the Volkswagen Group businesses from Helston Garages. Helston Garages is that very successful business down in the West Country that had some fantastic brands in its portfolio, Ferrari, Porsche, among others. Virtue is in advanced talks to buy the lion's share of that. Rybrook has taken Porsche from the portfolio, but Yeomans, the South Coast based business, has taken the large number of Volkswagen Group sites. So it includes an Audi, two Volkswagen commercials dealerships, four Skoda, and two trade TPS trade parts services.
We deal with TPS. We spend thousands for TPS because.
So clearly a decent business to snap up there. It's going to take Yeomans from 320 million turnover this year to 450 million next year, and a real coup for James Smith, who's the chairman and MD of Yeomans. James, a fantastic operator, a really nice guy, and I'm delighted that he's managed to seal that deal. I know he's over the moon with that. And just nice to see it go into another family business. Mm. You know, Yeomans is still run by the same family. They run it with that family ethos, and Helston Garages was the same. So I'm sure those people that work for those businesses are going to be very pleased that they've been snapped up by a family firm.
Yes, it's nice that it's not gone to an enormous one beginning with M and owned by something beginning with C, for example.
I had to get a Volkswagen that a customer bought off us into a VW dealer very quickly after he'd bought it. And the customer was going to take it for a software update. So I was booking him in, and I rang the garage. And the guy on the service counter, I said, look, I don't want you to do a health check when it's there, because you're just going to ruin my experience with my customer. He's bought a 12-plate Golf off us. He's going to turn up. I'm paying you for the software update, and then you're going to make $2,000 or $3,000 worth of recommendations, which your car doesn't need. Hmm. And he said to me, he said, listen, Jamie, we're a family-owned main dealer group. We're not a big PLC. You know, we're sensible. I'm not going to ruin your relationship with the customer here. I'm going to get it in. I'm going to do the help. I'm going to do your bit, and then I'm going to get him on his way. It's fine. He said, we do have a duty of care to make sure the car's safe. He said, I'm not going to ruin your relationship because we're family business. You know, you just talked about family businesses there. It's funny because we're family business, and we just try and do things that little bit differently. And I would much rather deal as a consumer and as a trader as well with a family-owned big enterprise than something that's owned by stockholders, you know, and shareholders in the city. So fair play to those family-owned businesses. Come on to the family-owned companies, man. What it's all about, you know.
Yeah, definitely.
You deal with people, man, more than accountants or numbers or systems. You deal with people, and that's the difference with us. Get quick plug for us in there. That's the difference with us. You buy off us, you deal with people and a family, you know. So that's one for the family owned groups. Come on.
People who care, definitely.
Definitely,
I get that. Right, John, over to you.
How many have you got left, James?
Right, just the one, depending on what you pick now.
Ooh, right. I am going to go with, I try and avoid stories about breaking the law, but I'm going to go with one because there's one factor of this that amused me slightly. So this is the story we have on our website the other day of a car dealer trying to outrun the police after taking an Audi from the showroom to drive friends from a pub to a party. So this is a gentleman that borrowed an Audi A3 from his place of work to ferry some friends about. He jammed the car so full of people that one of them was in the boot. Recommend that. After spotting police, he floored it with the police giving chase. He then abandoned the car with all his friends in it and fled the scene, left his friends behind. Spent 2 weeks misleading the police and only owned up after two of his friends were arrested. So all of his friends, to their credit, did not dob him in. I mean, that was quite impressive. But what gave him away, what amused me about this not terribly good story, is he was found out because he'd left the trade plates on. So...
whoops.
Yeah. So that was quite impressive. So I think the police contacted the dealership and him and told, and he said that the Audi had been stolen from the forecourt the night before and then all this, that and the other, and then supported the investigation by chatting to them and saying, da, 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 da. But yes, was found out eventually. But there we go. So if you take your car out for a jaunt, if you take a car out from a jaunt for the dealership, don't take the trade plates. Well, don't leave them behind when you run away, I think is the crux.
The spiral of lies, it just got worse, wasn't it? And he just kept going and kept going. We often joke about trade plates, though. If you want to get pulled over in a car, put trade plates in the window. You never get pulled up when you've not got trade plates. It's honestly, it's ridiculous. It's like the trade plate. Oh, they've got trade plates. Let's see what they're doing, or let's go and follow them. You know, I don't use trade plates. You know, not that I'm ever doing anything dodgy in a car. There's no bodies in the boot or anything, but just unbelievable.
Let's move on before Jamie incriminates himself.
Yes.
Right. I'm going to go with... So my last story, I had two. And one was about the Inchcape finance chief who's had to quit his job earlier this week after making a dodgy comment at a party. But I'm not going to do that one. I'm going to go with something else, which is a little bit happier. And this is a tale. The headline is A Tale with Two Happy Endings.
Oh, Burrow, no. Toyota. I had this one.
Oh, sorry. This is a tale with two happy endings as Burrow's Toyota comes to the rescue of a customer who lost his wedding ring. So this is just a really, really nice story about a customer that took his car into Burrow's Toyota. It was a Toyota Yaris. And this guy had lost a huge amount of weight. He'd lost 8.5 stone. And his wedding ring kept on falling off his hand, unsurprisingly. And he lost it somewhere in the car. So when he traded his car in, he said to the salesperson, I think I've lost my wedding ring in the car somewhere. It might be around the around this area, around where the handbrake is. If you find it, it'd be great if you can let me know. So the sales lady who was dealing with it mentioned this to her boyfriend, who happened to work in the workshop, who got to work trying to find this wedding ring. Eventually found it, and you can guess what happens next. It's like Love Actually at this time of year. He proposed and they're going to get married. I mean, it's just a beautiful story, which I absolutely loved.
I should clarify there, it's the boyfriend who proposed, not the customer who was...
So hold on, the boyfriend proposed to her and left off with the ring.
With the ring.
With the massive ring, the giant. That probably fit on a wrist.
Well, we don't have that detail. I mean, I would like to think it was with one of the many crisps or pork scratchings that was also pulled out of the dashboard.
The Haribo ring, isn't it? Come on,
the Haribo sale McDonald's fry. There's always a McDonald's fry down the side, isn't it? Can we just go back to the last story, James, that you didn't want to talk about?
Oh, okay, we can. Yeah, we can.
I read that article on the train on the way to London on the awards. I was like, this guy's been bulleted. He's done something. What did he do?
So he it came out a little bit later in the week that he made a sexist remark at a leadership event in Texas. The story says he stood down as a result of an ill-judged remarks about women at a company event for leadership in Texas, said the story. Daily Telegraph reported that alcohol was served at the event where the alleged incident took place, but it's not known whether De Zouten was under the influence. De Zouten, who was the CFO of Inchcape, will receive a £610,000 payout to cover his 12 months notice period, but he won't get bonus or share award payments made. So the way it was described was a source close to the situation says that the comments wouldn't have been considered that unusual 10 years ago. So that's as close as we're going to get to find out what he said, which is... So,
James, we were discussing this, weren't we, on Monday?
Yes.
And because at that time, I think it had been announced. Wasn't it announced via the...
It was an RNS stock update to the stock exchange on Monday morning. Very brief statement that said he voluntarily tendered his resignation and would be standing down from the board immediately.
And what we found odd, or what I found odd, well, we both found odd, was that it was described in this level of detail in that update, wasn't it? It was following
an incident at a recent event where, through a lapse of judgment, the senior executive had displayed personal behaviour falling short of the high standards expected of the leadership of the group.
I mean, that's an interesting choice to publish that, isn't it? Rather than just saying he has left for personal reasons.
Yes.
Similar, which is usually what happens.
Do you think there was somebody high up in the organisation who perhaps was female who took particular offence at what he'd said and thought, I'm not just going to sack you, I'm going to publicly flog you as well at the same time? Yeah. I don't know.
It does look like it, doesn't it?
If, you know, because again, in these kind of corporate structures and stuff, there's always these little internal battles and power struggles and things going on, isn't there, behind the scenes? Like me and Craig, you know, we'll be battling, you know, it looks all calm. There's a facade, but, you know, there's underlying battles. Not really. It's not really like that. But you think in that big corporate kind of world, it is, isn't it? And they're all looking for, I don't know, to climb and stuff. I don't know. But it's 2022. If you're going to say something sexist, don't do it on a stage in front of hundreds of people. Don't do it anyway. Do you know what I mean? But certainly don't do it there. You've got yourself to blame. Year off, 650 grand.
Not too bad, is it?
It's not exactly a slap on the wrist, though, is it?
But hey.
Well,
that wasn't my story, but is my story, but is now a story. but was John's story. Over to you, John.
Sorry, John. I think I've run out.
yeah, that's me definitely out.
I'm casually checking to see if there's anything else I want to talk about but have ignored, and I don't think there is. So I'm going to end it here, I think. So... Jamie, before we ask for your verdict, are there any stories you think we've missed? And we barely talked about used car awards in this particular. I did actually want to ask you, Jamie. I'm slightly leading to an anecdote, but yes. You spoke to a customer, didn't you, before the awards?
Yes. Yeah, I wanted to talk about this, and I'm glad we're going to talk about this. Shall I tell the story?
Please do.
So two Saturdays ago, took a call from a Spanish gardener, like older guy, and I think he's his late 50s, and he was interested in a Mitsubishi L200 that we had, and I did a deal with him over the phone, sent him his link for finance, he proposed himself, we got the deal paid out, I mean literally start to finish probably an hour, and we were delivering the car this week, and at the end of the bit I said everything's done, he said, oh, do you know how I heard about you? And I was kicking myself, like, I should have asked him, shouldn't I, really? Customers volunteering this information. And I said, no. And he said, I get stories via Google sent to my phone, as I do. I regularly get these stories. And he said, and I got a story from a company called Car Dealer Magazine. And it talked about you having won Dealer's Dealer of the Year over a three-year period and how you as a business were up for another award at this year's Car Dealer Awards. And he said to me, I made the decision at that point that I did not want to deal with any other business. I wanted to deal with you guys. You're an award-winning business. I'm 3.5 hours away from you. There's hundreds of dealers in my vicinity. But as soon as I read that news article, there was only one garage I was buying from, and I was so pleased when I looked on your forecourt, you had a car I was interested in. So, and I kind of was like, really, man, does this really happen? He WhatsApped me the link. And he emailed the link to me as well. And I screenshotted it, didn't I, James? Because I thought, I've got to share you this story with you. And that shows the power of the internet. That guy would never have known about us. Some of your stories pop onto my Google, you know, occasionally. I don't message you about it every time it happens.
That's thanks to our excellent SEO expert. I don't know who that is.
John somebody or other?
No, is that you?
John somebody.
Yeah.
Look at John just sat there and he just happened to stretch.
Yeah, you're welcome for the L200, by the way.
Thank you. But just remarkable. And it was just nice that it happened like a week before the awards and stuff. I was so buzzed about that. And I've told loads of people about it as well. I told loads of people on the night. Unbelievable. But so thank you for that deal. That was a good deal as well.
You are very welcome. You paid us back by appearing on our podcast and
exactly
letting one of us win.
Yeah. Okay, hang on. Yeah.
You're gonna ask me my favorite story now, aren't you?
I am. I'm gonna ask, do you think we've missed anything?
I don't know. I mean, I'm trying to think what else has happened this week in the motor trade world. I can't really think.
I mean, two of us were quite hungover for most of it. James wasn't because he just drinks Diet Coke, so he just had quite a headache.
But yeah, there's not a huge amount else going on. Look, the main event of the year just happened, hasn't it? So it's all downhill for me. You know,
It's Christmas.
It's the pinnacle of the year, but I don't think you've missed anything. We can talk about us winning an award again if you want and how it made me feel.
I think we've done that.
But in that case, I don't like his attitude, Jamie. Just saying. I'm going to ask, who do you think has won?
The best story of the week, it's got to be Robin's wife at the train station hiding and then him seeing her a couple of tables across. So literally, he was sat at the awards not knowing that his family was two tables.
Exactly, like,
that. I love it. It's a recipe for disaster. Can you imagine? Imagine if there was someone on the black horse table and he was like, arm round, how you going on?
Oh, God.
Right. What's happening later? I'm sure his son probably had his eye on him anyway. So, like, keeping an eye on dad. But just brilliant. And the fact that he kind of clocked her across the table and thought he recognised her. But just nice to see, again, a small, this is obviously a decent-sized business, but in essence, a small family business picking up Lifetime Achievement Award gives me hope that maybe in 15, 20 years, man, I could be up there, you know. But no, that's the story of the week. So for me, the winner, the man, the big dog himself, James Baggett.
Yes, thank you. Oh, wow. Thank you, Jamie. You're welcome back.
Superimpose a round of applause over the sound and sound effects and stuff.
I will give you that, James, because I did not know about that excellent anecdote. So, yeah, I think that's fair. Well, all that's left for me to say then is thank you to Jamie for judging today. It's been great to have you on. Please come back.
Thank you.
Always a pleasure.
And I'm mega grateful. I just want to say this. Sorry to jump in, because you know I love to talk. I love what you guys do for the industry. I say this every time, but I do. I love the news updates that I do. You provide a service to the trade that we don't pay for, and it's great, you know, and you help unite us all, you know, because without like the awards and some of the things you do, we wouldn't get to see our fellow dealers. The amount of people I saw on Monday, had a chat with, without your awards, they're people that I might not see again for another 2-3 years or ever again. And lots of those people have been on my own personal journey in this industry and our businesses. So just keep up the good work. You're like an adhesive, a glue that helps bond us all together in this industry. And you should be very proud of what you do because, you know, it's top notch. So we're very grateful. Thanks for getting us involved in stuff. We'll give you whatever you ever need. If you need us, ring us. If we can ever do anything for you, just pick up the phone and ask. And thanks for everything you do for the trade. I mean that.
Thank you. Thank you, Jamie. That means a lot. Thank you very much.
Yes, that's a lovely sentiment to end. And I can see James's head growing in his tiny office.
True.
End.
Yes, on that note, well, thank you as well to James for competing. And thank you, of course, for listening. We'll be back next week with another episode. So make sure you're subscribed so you can be notified when that goes live. If you're listening on Spotify, don't forget you can swipe up now and vote on who you think won. If you want to check out the stories we've mentioned today, you can click the links in the show notes below or head to cardealermagazine.co.uk, which of course you will be doing anyway. Thanks again, and until next time, goodbye.